Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
Can't get to during the week.
Right. You got to squeeze it all in because Sunday you're trying to get ready for Monday.
You got that right. But other than that, it's been a great week. It's a great day. It's beautiful outside, finally. It's still like spring, and I'm happy to be on the air with you guys.
Absolutely. Where's Bebo? Is he in hair and makeup?
You know he's staying in hair and makeup. Bebo, are you with us or what? Just where he is. We got to get
hair
his
hair and makeup. He could be a Devo sometimes. I see you.
I know. I got to go check out what's going on in hair and makeup that keeps them in there.
Right. What they got in hair and makeup?
That we don't have on the show.
Absolutely.
But you know what? We can handle this because we bosses, right?
Absolutely.
So
we're going to get the party started until Bebo gets out of hair and makeup. Mimi is driving. She's currently on the road.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we're going to be able to
decide the show.
Yeah. Wonder if we're going to be able to tell the difference of a before and after with him in the hair and makeup. What do you think?
I don't know. I wonder. He might come in all hyper and cheerful. I'm going to have to go in the same hair and makeup. I got to go where he go. Clearly, I'm going to the wrong place. I got the wrong people backstage.
And I got to meet those people backstage. But we're going to get this party started tonight. So hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to Saturday night. I believe this is our first Saturday night with Writing Royalty, isn't it, Alicia?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. This is like, yeah, I think it is.
It is our first Saturday, so we got a date tonight with all of our listeners and with each other. But my name is Tony. For those that don't know, I'm one of your three co-hosts, although one is in hair and makeup, for whatever reason that may be. But I'm an avid reader. I love everything regarding literature, and we have a great show on tap for you guys tonight. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my great co-host to the right, Miss Alicia. You want to tell them who you are, girl?
Hey, everybody. I'm Alicia. For those who don't know who I am the head of Writing Royalty Promotions, as well as the head promoter and assistant for Nimi Capri and Boss Lady Publishing. I run four groups on Facebook. I'm an avid reader as well. Super excited. We have a nice little dicey show tonight, Crazy in Love. So we have a wonderful guest. We're going to get popping with that topic and see what's going on, because that's going to be hot right there.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, I'd like to do some little house cleaning as well and let everybody know that haven't picked up some of Nene Capri's hot releases. She has the P-Trop series, 1, 2, and 3. And everyone be on the lookout because part 4 is on its way. We'll let you know when to expect that. She also has the Trust No Biff series, 1, 2, and 3. Those are all 5-star bangers. You got to get those in the library. She shares those hot titles with Cash, Streetlit, Arthur. So please, pick those up as well. Nene has an awesome new release under G Street Chronicles titled Tainted. And if you haven't been tainted, you definitely want to get that in your library. And part 2 is on its way, so be on the lookout for that. And for my co-host, who's constantly in hair and makeup, Aaron Bebo, he has some phenomenal works for you to pick up as well. He has Cupid's Assassin of Love, that's Cupid's Assassin Part 2. And he just had a new release, I Used to Love Her. I'm actually in the middle of reading that, and it's so good so far. And that title is under the G Street Chronicles. Man, Alicia, they are taking over the industry, you know?
Absolutely. They're making moves.
Please,
they're making moves.
Power moves, girl. So please be sure to pick that up. And for the release that we've all been waiting for, till my cast is dropped, two authors, one title, two books. That's dropping next Friday, April 18th. So you guys get ready to click that.
This is so awesome.
It is. That's history in the making, Alicia.
Absolutely.
You know, And I also want you guys to keep on the lookout for our blogs. Now, this is a mouthful, so bear with me. We have Boss Lady Chronicles at bossladies14.wordpress.com. We have Writing Royalty Blog at writingroyalty2014.wordpress.com. And you can also visit Writing Royalty at writingroyalty.blogspot.com with Writing Royalty to keep you guys connected to your favorite authors.
Absolutely. Now, we also want you to make sure that you're sending in your email to enter into our summer giveaway, and that goes to writingroyalty@gmail.com. That, again, is writingroyalty@gmail.com.
They want to make sure because those are they're going to do some great giveaways and great surprises. So that's a great way to also stay connected and to keep abreast of what's going on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Also, we have a trapper alert. We got a few trapper alerts. Philly will be in your area next Friday and Saturday. So Nene Capri will be in the Philadelphia area next Friday and Saturday. Friday she will be at Books A Million, and that's the Gallery Mall, 901 East Market Street, and that's from the hours of 3 to 7 p.m. And then on Saturday, she will be at Black & Nobel's Bookstore, and that is at 1409 West Erie Avenue. And that's in Philadelphia as well, from the hours of 3 to 7, and she will be there with the awesome author, Jason Poole. So they will be holding it down, putting Philly in a trap hole.
That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
If I didn't have other commitments, I would say a road trip is in the works.
See, and I stay so far. I stay in the Midwest, so just to be able to go, you know, there is a little hard for me, but I sure would. Because it just seems they always get a lot of love up in that New Jersey, New York area.
Mm-hmm.
They get a lot of love. There's always a book signing somewhere. We get them here, but not as often. So hopefully we'll get some this year.
Well, we got to get you on a road trip.
I know. I was just saying I need the money yesterday. I need a trip.
Yeah. That would be fun to get up. But those, like you said, they're really fun. And that's how I got to meet Nene in person and got to know her as well as Wahida Clark. So any time they're in the Tri-State area, I try my best to make it there just to show some support and some love. But regarding our hot topic tonight, Lisa, this crazy in love, that's an interesting topic. And you can take it so many ways, you know. And I can only relate to what I read in my favorite books by my favorite authors, but it can It can be a challenge being crazy in love. What do you think about that topic?
Absolutely agree that it
could
be a challenge. Oh,
are
you out of here, makeup now?
Listen, I've been here the whole time. I'm waiting for y'all. I was waiting for y'all to bring me in, but y'all started playing tennis so well, I was like, yo, this is a pretty decent match.
No,
I ain't
want
to interrupt y'all. Listen,
no,
been on,
we need to go to your hair and make
on the line? Do you want to know how long I've been on the line? Because if you've been looking, you would have seen
three
me
minutes.
In
three minutes? 3 seconds? You ain't been on there long.
Absolutely
you ain't been
not.
On there long.
I've been on the line for 6 minutes and 22 seconds.
No, you have not. You hear
which
this?
Is,
you hear this? Tone.
Which is shortly after you called my name and started with the hair and makeup joke.
You hear this? Tone.
And wouldn't stop.
You hear this?
I hear
shenanigans.
We did not see you pop in, Steve-O. You know.
I know you guys are doing such a marvelous job. You're doing such a marvelous job. I was like, hey.
You know what it is, Misha? Just the before and after I was telling you, we didn't even recognize him.
Uh-huh.
He was in there so
That's
long.
That's right. That's right. I'm gonna have to. We gonna have to go in his hair and makeup room. I need to know
hair.
What's going on up in there. Because clearly we going to the wrong people.
Without further ado, let's give him his proper introduction, Lisa. Do your thing, girl.
Okay, we got the number one stunner. He's finally out of hair and makeup, Mr. Aaron Bebo. I hope you bought us some food. Did you cook?
Yeah, I did. I made something real quick and easy.
Tacos?
No, pot pies. real smooth.
All right, pot pies, huh?
Yeah.
Now, I do cook. I'm a Southern girl, and I have a husband from the islands, so I do cook, but that's one thing that I have never made, believe it or not, pot pies.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, have never made pot pies, so I don't know, maybe is that something that I need to learn how to cook, people?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be something different. You can switch it up.
That's true. That's true. Well, that's something for me to think about. But back to our hot topic, this crazy in love. Lisha was getting ready to explain her take on that. Go ahead, my girl.
Absolutely. Now, it can go many different ways. You know, most of the time, it starts off, in my opinion, as sometimes people are, I call sucker for love, where you kind of avoid stop signs, you avoid warning signs, and you just go all into this relationship, and the person is not really, you know, it's the wrong kind of love. It's not really the person that you should really be focusing on. But sometimes people don't know how to walk away because they try to make a twig a root. And you can't, mm-hmm. you know, twigs, they blow all around. You know, they don't stand and last forever. They don't hold you down. But in some instances, people get a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bust the car windows and cutting up clothes and bleaching clothes, and it can get crazy. And I think men could get crazier than women. I don't care what anybody says. Ain't nothing like a man that's crazy in love. What you think, Bebo?
Well, I think it's different instances of being crazy in love. Like, you know, you could be crazy in love in a good way. You know, it could be just like you just crazy in love. Like, you just love this person so much. You know, and then I think it's the other crazy in love where you may be feeling like you love a person, but your actions are destructive, or just your relationship together is toxic, and it becomes a crazy kind of love, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm really starting to see that type of love more and more now, because I think like the art of courting has kind of left.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
like
true.
there's no more courting anymore. So it's like, you might meet somebody on a social networking site, bang, next thing you know, you're off. You know, or anyway, not just social network, just anyway, it's just like people are just not taking the time anymore to really experience life in its fullness. Everything is just going so fast, and I think that that could be a part of the problem of crazy in love.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you should say that, Devo, because before you said the word toxic, that I had wrote that down, because it can become toxic, and that's when it slips on you. You know, like you said, crazy in love could be a beautiful thing. I'm just so happy. I'm so crazy in love with my man, my woman. You know, that's on a positive note. But then you get that toxic, and it's not even love. It's just this. It just takes over you. It's just a bad thing. And every time I think of that, I think of Sharon Stone in that movie. I don't remember the name of it, but that's that toxic kind of love to make you do stupid and crazy things.
What's
you know? That's when I think of toxic love. Ebo, you're the movie buff. Come on.
The movie? What, Crazy in Love?
Yeah.
What, the movie with Beyonce? Mm-hmm.
No, with Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas.
Oh, you're talking
about the rabbit.
Oh, yeah, you talk about the joint when she was going. She was crazy, y'all. I can't even remember. That was a classic, too.
That's crazy in love. That's that toxic thing that you get caught up in.
What was the name of that? Because that became a classic for, like, any type of toxic relationship, period. They were just putting that label on it. Yeah, they were just straight putting that label on it.
That's
like, yeah,
I remember
that. She cooked the rabbit. She broke in the house. Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction. Now, that's toxic, and that's crazy. I guess that she thought
that
she
was
in love, what do you think?
That was crazy. I mean, even the joint with Beyonce and what's the guy's name? Ibris.
Idris Elba.
Oh yeah. She was crazy too. But she was mental.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what though? I know disrespect. I'm not trying. I don't mean funny, but the white Dave. You know, even in that movie, they had to get the white lady to play totally nuts. Like for real. Yeah, because a sister probably would have just did something crazy, like, you know.
It wouldn't have lasted as long as it did.
Broke his car windows out or something, and, you know, her and a girl might have poured sugar in his tank a couple of times, and, you know, that would have been about it. Try to get some money from him if they was married. Other than that, it would have been like, you know, it wouldn't have been none of that. I'm breaking in his house. I want to take pictures with the kids. I'm about to beat myself up and lie to the wife. Like, that was crazy.
You're right, but when I think of crazy love, that's the first thing that popped in my head. Sharon Stone, she'll be forever known in that role.
But have y'all noticed that crazy, not the actors or actresses that play crazy characters, they play them so well, but they play them multiple times that you wonder, this must be really what you like. You can relate to this character a little bit too much. Even like Halle Berry.
Mm-hmm.
She plays crazy characters well, too.
Yes, because she's a little off. But I think sometimes, actors get themselves typeset. Like, if you do too good, like, for instance, like the guy, I don't know if you know, remember, if you guys know who Bokeem Woodbine is. He was in... Jason's Lyrics. He was the brother.
The brother, yeah. Oh, he played crazy.
Yeah, he was the brother. The one who had came home from jail. The young one. He played a thug so good in all his movies, like that's all he can play. Like from the first movie I ever seen him in, like I think it was Strapped. And from there, like all he's been playing is that role. Even if they try to dress him up in a soldier uniform or no matter what, like he's going to sell that attitude. He's going to be the unruly one. You know, it's like he just got typecast in that part.
Uh-huh.
And he's definitely another crazy type in love person too. That was some crazy in love stuff in Jason's Lyrics, how he loved his brother.
His brother.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, so like, yeah, that was crazy too.
Yeah, that was crazy. But I think we got a clip from my Fatal Attraction. I think it was someone just let hypnosis do it. It was Basic Instinct. Was that the name of it?
Ooh.
Basic Instinct. That's Sharon at her best.
That's another one.
What about that one with Madonna? I don't remember the name of it. Madonna was in it. That's the one where she poured the candle wax on dude's back.
Oh yeah, I kind of last thing I seen that I liked by Madonna was Desperately Seeking Susan. That was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
No, I loved that movie too.
Yeah, that was my
but
movie.
But no, it was who was the dude? I want to say it was Michael Douglas too. Not Michael Douglas, the other guy. Can't remember his name. Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin. He's
pretty good. But I'm gonna be interested in hear how I guess they've been on this Crazy in Love. But I have a question. When you think of Crazy in Love, do you think of the beginning? Do you think they're going in crazy, or just elements that led up to them just losing their mind, or just it's the illusion of being in love?
Mm-hmm.
What spin on that would you put?
I think it could be both. Now, crazy in love don't necessarily have to be a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? It could just be that y'all just going in and it's just so exciting all the time. You know, it doesn't really have to be a bad thing. But I think it's a little bit of both. It's the beginning and the end. Because, you know, in the beginning, normally y'all together all the time. Y'all hanging out. Y'all doing this. Y'all doing that. So it's like, all the time you're doing something, you together, y'all riding, y'all hanging, y'all partying, whatever it is that y'all doing. But it's just exciting, you know. And then towards the end, when you have that toxic kind of crazy, I think it's where people can't let go. And sometimes the other person doesn't allow them to let go. Because even though you say, okay, yeah, this is not what I want to do, you're still giving them signs. Nonverbal communication, signs and signals that we still going to do what we do. I just need, you know, which is not letting them, it's not helping them because you're giving them a reason to hold on instead of just letting them let go. What about you, B?
Yeah, I definitely think that it's definitely two different sides, like you said. And I think that it can be both. Like, I think it could be something that develops over time. You know, as a person, because some people can't handle love. Like, they don't know how to handle it. Like, if you take a person who's never been loved before, and then, you know, they start loving you, you know, that may cause all types of other traits to arise in them, like jealousy, other things like that. So you never really know. And then you have the person who's just crazy right off the rip. Like, they're already crazy, and you just didn't see the signs. Like, you missed it because you were so in love that you had the blindfold on and you missed the signs, you know.
I think you're in my head tonight because while Risha was talking, another thought that came to my mind as Eugene's voice was, did that person go in with their full capabilities? You know, they're all their marbles. Because sometimes you don't see those missing marbles or those loose marbles
right away.
Exactly, and over a period of time, you know, things happen. So they may not have been as stable as they appear to be to this other person. You know, maybe that instability came out and they started drifting away, and that's when the craziness comes out. What do you think?
Yeah,
I think you're correct, and I truly believe in the 90-day rule. I don't look at it as far as, like, the way Steve Harvey looks at it. But I look at it like this. Within 90 days, they're going to do something. They're going to say something. It's going to be something to let you know that you need to be moving on, you know. But if you just jump in and everything, you start missing stuff. I got to have time. I got to see what's going on. You know, you got shifty eyes. Your eyes was looking good when I first met you. Now they 3 weeks down, you a little shifty looking, you know. So you gotta pay attention. You gotta know who you're dealing with and what they about. You know, just sometimes you just see things. And sometimes mm-hmm. your family members or friends see things that you may not see. You know, they mm-hmm. might be like, hey, yo, Aaron, baby girl, I don't know. And, you know, just because they see what you don't
right.
see. Like, Aaron, what's that story you always tell about your friend who was dating a girl that everybody was sleeping with?
Mm.
Yeah, like, that's real. And then they start, you know, feeling like they could change somebody, whatever, like, they be in love. It be that person, like, they be bugging. Like, listen, you can't change what's going on. This is this person, and that's where that crazy in love come in, too, where people be trying to change people.
Mm-hmm.
And the effort is met with resistance. That could cause some crazy
uh-huh.
type of love, too.
You're right.
You know,
that's
like,
true.
There's somebody trying to change you, and you ain't having no acceptance towards, you know, what they want or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that could cause a crazy situation.
I'm actually reading some of her work. That first one, Fiending, is that one of the ones that
uh-huh.
you enjoyed reading, Risha? And I get the sense that things that appear to be are not necessarily as they are. You know, from her, I think her name is Tiny. It's the lead character, am I right?
Yeah,
I think
that's her name.
Okay, she was dealing with some issues, like, behind at home that weren't seen in the outside, and that can lead you to be kind of crazy because you're living a double life. You know, you're living one life
absolutely.
At home, and it appears to be one way, but when you go outside, you're either trying to escape it or to hide it, you know, and that's just another escapism from those loose marbles that you can have up there. And that can turn a person into being crazy.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you what you think about that with the, you know, living that double life, and sometimes you can just snap because it becomes too much.
Absolutely. I was also going to say Vanna B. Shout out to Vanna B. She got some books where
mm-hmm.
they crazy in love up in there. They doing, they just, yeah. You got to get you to Vanna B too. She got some crazy going on.
But I'm also reading, I'm reading so much. I used to love her, you know, and people got a character in there named Dana. I don't know about her. I'm still waiting to see her development because I know you got her in development, Diva, because that's your pen. You're the director with a developing pen. So I'm interested to see how her role plays out. Is he back in hair and makeup?
He probably is.
I'm shouting out his character, and we're getting silent.
No, I'm not. No, you know what? Honestly, really, because I can hear y'all. I think my phone might be messing up.
Okay.
I can hear y'all. Like, I'm not in hair and makeup.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to tell Beth.
Aaron, like, look, I'm going to need y'all to stop telling people I'm in hair and makeup.
Yeah,
I'm gonna
man.
Let boss lady know.
Listen. That's what y'all gonna blow my costume when I go out. You know I'll be dressing in drag to try to, you know, keep the...
You know what? Stop it.
But I don't want to give too much of I used to love her way because Lisa is having bookitis because she hasn't gotten that book. You know, she's still waiting on Amazon to release it.
No.
You know what,
Tony?
I was trying to let those wounds heal, but I haven't gotten my book, and everybody else has gotten theirs. But since we have
mm-hmm.
the author on the line, I'm going to need you to make a phone call. Tell them stop sending me emails on when they're going to send it, and just send me my book.
What was the date they gave you? Because I swear, like, mine came on the exact date. Like, they told me April 9th. April 9th, it was delivered.
They told me Friday. They told me I would get it out. Friday.
Oh, you know what, though?
And then I got
one that said Monday. Do you got Prime?
I got Prime.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's the problem.
But like, girl, seriously, wait till you get it.
But they definitely told me. But yes, I mean, listen, there's definitely some crazy in love going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely some crazy in love.
I'm really enjoying it, but I just started it, I believe it was yesterday, because I have so many things open on my Kindle. That's the beauty of being, you don't have to carry so many books around. So I'm reading that, reading. So I'm looking forward to finishing it. Yeah, Gutter from last night.
Yes.
So I've been a busy bee.
But absolutely.
But Lisa, you're going to enjoy it because I'm really enjoying it. Hats off to you, Bebo.
See?
And I'm into that.
It is Blog Talk because Tony's breaking up, and she wasn't a minute ago.
Really?
Right now I'm getting through that Silence of the Nine. Shout out to T Styles, y'all. I'm telling y'all, that book right there, it's like she done took two or three different type of genres and kind of smushed them together.
Really?
Because you got a little bit of, yes, you got just some street lit. You got the street lit going on. And then you kind of got you her twisted, like suspense type. And it seemed like a little contemporary going on. It's like all smashed up into one. But I don't want to tell, I don't know if anybody has read it, but it's totally crazy. The guy, you could tell he was crazy in the beginning. And him and his wife, they kind of had some crazy love going on. I can say that. They had some crazy love going on before some things took place. But, Homeboy, he took it to a whole nother level of crazy. So shout out to T Styles because she's doing her thing.
Shout to T Styles. I just on that book that you're speaking about. Like, I just want to say, I was tuning into a interview that they were doing the other day, and they were talking about the book, and she was speaking about, you know, the Shakespearean effect that she was adding to the book, and about how she thought, you know, Shakespeare was like the master of crazy, crazy love.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm sure that there's some ill twist, and the fact that she used such a, you know, Shakespeare, that's crazy. I was very impressed by that alone.
Uh-huh.
You know, Shakespearean type of introduction. So that's kind of hot.
Absolutely. Well, I see our author, our guest author, Miss Serenity Hall, is in the clubhouse. Let's take a little break and play some intro music, and then we can chop it up in the clubhouse for Miss Serenity Hall.
Sounds good.
Y'all want to do that?
Yes.
All right. Who has her bio?
I'll have her bio.
Okay, so are we doing the music first and then the bio, or?
Yeah, we'll do the music first and then the bio.
Okay.
I'm the cold one.
That song by Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
So let me read Ms. Serenity Hall's bio before we bring her in. Serenity Hall is an urban fiction author who pulls her creative juices and characters from everyday life, from the people, places, and things that she's seen. And while serving time in Mariana Federal Prison Camp, Serenity didn't want to waste her time being idle and wanted to have a foundation to build upon her release. After reading an urban fiction novel by the Queen of Thug Fiction, Wahida Clark, and many others, Serenity was inspired to begin her writing career shortly thereafter. She queried Miss Clark, who signed her to a book deal, and the rest, as they say, is history. Aaron, can you bring in the talented author, Miss Serenity Hall?
I sure can. I already got her in because that is the best bio we done had thus far. All the right things you need to know and not a bunch of stuff you don't.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
Good evening. Good evening.
Hi,
good evening.
Serenity.
Hi.
Welcome to the clubhouse. We're so honored to have you with us this evening.
Thank you for
having
me.
Been fiending to get you here.
I've been fiending to get here, too.
So, how's your weekend been going?
Our weekend is going pretty crazy right now. We have the Masters Golf Tournament here in Augusta this week. So I've been kind of working 16-hour days. But it's good. I can't complain, really.
Oh, you said you were in Augusta?
Yeah, I live in Augusta, Georgia.
Yo, you sound just like you from there, too, because I know this lady from Augusta. And y'all sound just alike. Like, I was like, yo, she sound like Renita.
Born and raised, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, she sound just like. I'm like,
it's
yeah. Funny. I'm yes, but blessings. We definitely glad to have you on the show. You know, busy's not always a bad thing. Busy's good sometimes.
Yeah,
it is.
What
it
else
is
have
now
you been busy doing?
Writing, finishing up my manuscript, Traces of My Blood. It was supposed to be
out. Getting ready to drop, right?
Yeah, my editor told me just to say soon, which is really soon, but we were supposed to put it out earlier, but I just wanted to make sure I didn't cheat my readers out of anything.
Okay, that's
okay.
What's up. That, now, that's important, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you definitely concerned about your readers and, you know, putting out a quality product for the readers. But let me ask you a question. How did you get hooked up with Ms. Clark? What was the initial, what made you submit to Ms. Clark? Was she your first choice or, you know, give us a little background on that.
I was reading her book and in the back of it, her address was in there. So I wrote to that address and then she wrote me back. Because I was reading Payback as a Mother. It was one of the second urban fiction books that I read while I was locked up. So, but her first book. So I wrote her, and she wrote me back, and she was like, send me your material. So when I sent it to her, she was like, I'm about to get out of prison. So, and we're going to keep in contact. So she got my manuscript, and it took a while. I was on pins and needles. So finally she emailed me back on CoreLink, and she told me that I was accepted.
Okay.
Oh,
wow.
I was so happy. I didn't know what to do.
So how has the experience been since having your, because I know, you know, you have Fiend in 1 and 2, so you done covered some ground. How has it been since, you know, publishing the book, being in the industry?
It's a lot of hard work, I can tell you that. I don't think I've been, like, I don't think that I know right now as much as I should, because I feel like it's an everyday learning experience. As you go, you learn more. Because I was in prison mm-hmm. when both of the books came out, so I didn't get a chance to, like, get out and meet readers or anything. So now with this new book coming out, I have a chance to do that.
Absolutely. Now I have a question for you. Go ahead, Tony, because I know you had a question about the book, too. No, I was just going to say that so it's like really putting out your first book experience.
Yes.
And from since you didn't get to experience the first two, am I right?
Yes, it is. Kind of nervous about it because I really, really want it to go well. So
mm-hmm.
that's why I try to put my all into it. Not saying that I didn't do it for the first one, but I've learned more. So now I know better, so I can do better.
That's what's up. But, you know, I'm glad that you opened to learning and that you said that you felt like you could learn more. That's a great thing, always, never feeling like, you know, you've reached any ceiling in knowledge and you're always ready to advance. So that's a beautiful thing. You definitely seem to have your mind right as far as, you know, getting your progressive steps in place so that you can be moving forward.
Absolutely. Now, this is your first book independent.
It is. Besides,
correct.
I did another
under
one.
Your own label?
Yeah, I did another one. I did under Dorothy Hall, which is my
mm-hmm.
real name. But it's more based on abuse, like children being abused and how
right.
parents can look for signs and stuff.
Okay.
So now this will be the first urban book.
Now, what do you enjoy as urban? I apologize. Go ahead, Alicia.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask. So the book that you have getting ready to come out, The Traces of My Blood, can you tell us a little bit about that book and just what was going on when you decided to write it?
Well, it's about, like, generations. You know how in black families, which all families, but I say black families because I've been around them so much. The mother, the grandmother, and the granddaughter is like everything is trickling down. All of them seem to be going through the same thing, and it's all happening in the hood, and everybody's trying to
mm-hmm.
find a way to get out of there, which that can sometimes be hard from experience.
Mm-hmm.
I know because I grew up in one myself. So what I kind of did was I took my experience of growing up around people like in the projects and living in the projects with my stepmom and watching the things people went through, even some of the things I went through myself with guys dating drug dealers and stuff like that. I kind of incorporated it into the book to kind of tell what people go through, how we can fall in love with the wrong people and think it's the right thing to do, and you don't want to listen to your parents after they've been through it because you think you know something new, and actually you don't. And you find out in the end that what my mama said was really right.
That's true. We always get that.
Yeah.
Everybody repeats that same famous line. But
mm-hmm.
I love him. You just don't understand. Everybody has said that. Everybody.
That's right. It's not one teenager
that hasn't said that.
I said it. That's how you end up in prison.
It's like a circle that just keeps going around and around.
Oh, yes.
So, I apologize. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was going to say, Biba, you had a question on the table.
Yeah, I was going to ask her about the domestic violence book and you know, as opposed to writing the urban fiction.
It's
and
not
she...
domestic. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please correct me when I'm wrong. Let
no,
me keep
saying
going.
It's not domestic violence. It's sexual abuse.
Oh, okay, sexual abuse. Okay. Do you see yourself writing another book like that, or is urban fiction where your true passion is as a writer?
Urban fiction is my true passion because I grew up in the street, but I wrote about sexual abuse because it was something that I went through when I was a child. So I felt like it was a stress reliever for me. It was like I poured my everything into this book from being in this program with these women when I was incarcerated. And I was like the first person to break open about it because it was just something I feel like I wanted to talk about. One of those skeletons I had buried in my closet. So when I opened up about it, the rest of the women started opening up about it, and I was kind of surprised because I haven't talk to anyone else that had been through the same situation that I had, or even worse. So after that, I was asking the ladies, like, do y'all mind if I put your stories in a book? And they was like, I don't mind, but just change our names and stuff like that. So that's what I did. And I kind of wrote it so parents can be analyzers of what's going on, and after you've been sexually abused, what happened? Like, how your life can be led in a different direction than what your parents wanted it to go through, especially when a child been abused and they're scared to tell, like, what happened. So they start to deal with it mentally themselves.
Let me ask you a question, because since you've actually experienced it, and I hope this isn't too personal, but and I really hope it's not, because I'm not trying to go directly into your situation, but I want to ask you, from a child being a woman now and actually experiencing that type of abuse, how much of the abuse, sexual abuse, do you think parents actually miss that they should see that the child, even with the child being, you know, maybe insecure, afraid to tell, how much of the signs do you think the parents should see that they often miss?
Some of the signs should be like, say you got an honor roll student, all of a sudden the child starts falling off, or the child starts getting rebellious toward the parents because they feel like you should know what's going on. Children don't just come from being this really, really good child, and then next thing you know, they're being a bad child out of nowhere. Something had to happen. Be it you've been sexually abused, or you out there sleeping around, like a teenage girl could be out, start sleeping around with guys. That means, you know, like when women give up their virginity, they feel like they don't fell in love with this guy, then their behavior change. It's kind of like the same thing with being sexually abused, in a sense, because your behavior pattern will change because of something else going on in your life that wasn't going on before. And if parents know their children, then they should know that there's something going on. That's just how I feel personally.
Absolutely.
And then some of them know it, and they don't care. It's like you have some women that love so hard that they're willing to let their man or woman abuse their child in order to keep them home.
That's true.
It really is.
Yeah.
And
I'm
glad you brought that up.
Me too.
Go ahead, B.
I'm glad you brought up the one thing I'm glad you brought up, honestly, when we speak about sexual abuse, is the fact of the girl going out there and sleeping around with different guys. That's sexual abuse, too, to herself, but it's still sexual abuse. Like, I'm glad you pointed that out, because sometimes I think that doesn't get added into the category of sexual abuse, and they'll use another term and just be like, oh, she's a hoe. You know what I mean? Instead of realizing, like, yo, nah, this is somebody who's being sexually abused, whether it's by their own or, you know, someone else is doing it, because sometimes people don't have the knowledge to know when they're being abused or when they're being abusive or destructive to themselves, because no one's there to reach out and help them. It's just the people that's being destructive with them around.
And I've been through it myself. When I was like 15 years old, I got him, and I have a child by this man, but when I was 15 years old, I started dating this older guy, looking for love in all the wrong places, I guess what I can call it. He was 35 years old, and I got pregnant during that time and had a miscarriage, and then I ended up having this child again at 18, but I felt like it was love, and it wasn't. And my fiance now, he says that, you mean to tell me that all these grown people was around you and they didn't have anything to say about a 15-year-old child dating a 35-year-old man? And I was like, nope. Nobody said anything about it.
That's true. I seen that same situation. Like, I seen that same exact situation. Like, it was just crazy to me. Like, I was watching, because I was young. You know, like, I was young watching this happen with, like, one of my cousins. So I'm like, yo, nobody don't got a problem with this? Like, everybody be just being cool. That's another thing, too, like the acceptance, the things that we accept, the abusive things that we accept in front of our children. You know, that's another thing.
But when a child sees that it's being accepted, where does that cycle end? Because they grow up to be adults that are also acceptive of things around them with their children. So it's like a never-ending cycle, and it's so unfortunate. But it happens every day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It happens every single day.
And I think society itself kind of condones it, because you have, not that they glorify it, but the dating an older woman or dating an older man, you know, people really don't pay attention to those things. Even like if you're an older woman and you have a younger man, but you have a daughter, you know, around his age, you know, stuff like that is sometimes parents don't think about, you know, and you kind of, I think, put your kids in bad situations, because sometimes you get with somebody so fast because you need that love, but it's not person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so often you have 16 and then they 21, and, you know, when you said 15 and he was 35, that's the first thing that popped in my mind was, did nobody see nothing wrong with that? It should be something wrong with that. I don't care in what neighborhood, what situation, we have to have a higher standard as far as a community of what we're going to consider okay behavior. And if a lot of times people only do what they're taught.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was just about to say that. Like, that's taught behavior, because, you know, there's other parts of the world where at 12 and 13, children are getting, what we consider children, are getting married. They're being inducted into the army, bearing arms, fighting for their country. You know, we live in the Western civilization that we live in is a little bit more sensitive towards things. And in turn, it makes us a little bit more sensitive, or our views become a little bit, like I just said, I'm like, yo, ain't nobody see nothing wrong with that. But if I was to go to Africa or something and be in a certain part of Africa, I would be looking like the eyeball, trying to point something like that out. Like, yo, what do you got? You got this guy over here? Because there's grown men that do take wives that are children, and it's okay. It's acceptable. You know, so just depending on where you're at, I don't want to, you know, just say that I'm, you know, hey, sling them all up over a tree if they doing that, because I'm just saying that that's what I was taught, the way that I was taught to think. And I'm not always, you know, down the middle with that, because like I said, I know that this is a Western civilization way of thought. So, you know, I mean, I'm kind of down the middle with it, but I personally, you know, don't think it's right because it was something I was taught.
But you also have to look at these are still children, and what happens, they are robbed of their childhood, you know, and that they don't have a chance to experience all the fun things that you do growing up, because adults are not testing them like they should. You know, they're just out to get whatever they... self-satisfaction, and that's just so wrong. So until adults and parents can really take care of their children and put their child first before whatever love that they may feel that they need, where does it change? Where does it change? When does it end?
And that goes into our topic as well, because our topic, Serenity, this evening is crazy in love. Mm-hmm. And there are some women, like you said, that are so crazy in love with a man that they either ignore, they allow whatever sexual abuse of their children. And it's in order just to hang on to one person. They really don't want to be there. They're there for a reason. And the reason is not because they love you, you know. But that's another form of crazy. A crazy kind of love where you would just do anything for this man.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you will put your children to the side.
put him before the kids. I'm sorry. But yeah, that's in traces of my blood. It's talking about that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, though. Like, that's, I'm going
to
tell you something. Like, a lot of times people be trying to shield a lot of things that we talk about. Like they try to cover, they put their hand over their mouth about it. But really and truly, a lot of times, depending on people's demographics and where they're from, like, a lot of times it really don't be a shocker to them. Like, there's definitely a bunch of situations in my neighborhood that I could just go back and think about, that I could look and be like, y'all, this guy was abusing this woman's daughter and she knew it. And she didn't straighten it. That goes on more times than what people would like to admit. Sometimes it's not always good to be politically correct, because it distorts the truth to a point where it's almost non-existent. Like, I don't think that, like, I personally, I don't think no mother, I don't think any woman could be staying in a house with any man and he's sleeping with their daughter, their child, and they not know it. I just don't believe that. That's just me. I just don't believe that that's possible.
I don't believe it either.
For real. Like, that's just me. Like, that doesn't even make no sense. I'm not saying it don't happen. I'm saying that I don't believe that a woman don't know. Like, a woman doesn't know. Because that would be like, if you have sleeping next to a man for any amount of nights in a row, especially if you're in a full-fledged relationship, and you are not able to recognize that this man is sleeping with your child, the child you birthed and you've been knowing all their life, then something's wrong with you.
I agree. Yeah, that's like they say, that women intuition is real.
I ain't gonna go with woman's intuition. I'm gonna go with common sense.
You really wouldn't go with that, but it's the truth. He's a man, so
and then just the statistics. Go ahead, Serena.
A woman could tell.
No, I was saying he's a man, so he had to say that he wasn't gonna go with the women's intuition.
Nah, because you know what? The reason why I say the woman's intuition, because some women like to put on track shoes with that. Like, they like to run with that. I definitely believe that women, you know, y'all have a very good insight to the world. And more times than not, and often than better than men. I'll give y'all that all day. I believe women are more intelligent than men by and large and numbers and all that. I believe all that. However, there are those times when a woman is so swarmed up in her emotions, because her emotions be swept up into something, that what she's thinking is woman's intuition is really just woman's insecurity.
That's what I was about to say. It's a difference now. It's just pure jealousy now. But it's that time when you get that gut feeling. You get that gut feeling, it's telling you what's going on. Like you said, if you lay by a man every night, you don't know what's going on. Something's wrong with you, because you,
word,
a woman, is going to pay attention to her man. She's going to know that man. It's like if you're in a relationship and you have a pattern, and you had this pattern for years, and then you change it, it's something going on.
Mm-hmm. And she's taking notes. She's taking notes.
Yeah. Worked overtime.
You just
turn
on her
your
calendar. Yep, worked overtime, came home, had purple shoes on. She taking notes, because it's like something has clicked in her mind that something ain't right amongst this little situation. And I can't put my finger on it, but I know it's something. You can, and that's like what Serenity was saying, the women's intuition, it's like a gut thing, though. You feel it literally in your gut. It's there, but there's a difference between that and just being downright crazy, where you just don't want to see it and you don't want to pay attention to what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I definitely, like I said, I give y'all that. Like, y'all be having, y'all women be on point. But sometimes it don't really be all that. But it definitely with the situation with a man sleeping with the woman he's in a relationship with, daughter, I don't care how you slice that cake, yo. Like, she gotta know, like, straight up. It just don't even make any real sense that she would. This is her child. This is her man.
Household.
Yeah, and they all in one house. Like, You can't read that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could tell, even if the man, because he's more mature, even if he's more mature and he's able to hold his place, your daughter going to give it away.
That's
your
right.
daughter is going to give it away, yo. And you definitely need to be watching your children's interaction with the men and the women that you bring them around in your life. So
right.
if you missing your child's signs, then you bugging. You crazy in love in another padded room somewhere.
Debo, you back in my head because I was going to say, even if she doesn't know that man, she should know that child. She should
Word
know
up.
Her child, you know, first and foremost. Even if you think you know your man and you don't, you should definitely be in tune with what's going on with your child.
Yeah,
because
the man might be out slicking you because at the time you were mostly attached to him too. So, you know, you're going to have blinders on in a certain sense, so you might be trying to peek from under the blind eye parts of what's going on or whatever. But if you really want to see what's going on, all you got to do is turn to your child. For real, like, you don't even waste a lot of time trying to figure out what he's doing. All you got to do is just keep turning right to your child and pay attention to your child, because that's going to tell everything. You don't have to quite, like, you just see the characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And
it don't have to be a relationship. Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying, I put it in endless tears, just like that, where you have to analyze what your child is doing and notice those signs. But
mm-hmm.
in the 21st century and before now, most women tend to steer towards the man because
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are in fear of being by themselves. So if you have
mm-hmm.
a man that's treating you like this, why not be by yourself? Can you find something better?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to tell you, I have known cases, and they're very, very few and very rare, where a child has lied on a man because she may have not liked him or whatever. And most of the time when I see that happen, it's not just the child. It's usually some other outside adult as well that may not like the person that will be planting this in the child's head.
Yes, true.
You know what I mean? But this is those, like I said, that's rare. And although I do know about those kids, I'm just bringing that up because I don't want nobody to be like, well, there's times when it happens, but that's rare. Very
mm-hmm.
rare.
But guess what? It wasn't a man that done it to me. Not the first time. It was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I was 8 years old at the time. It was my dad's girlfriend.
Wow. How disturbing was that? This is somebody you trust.
Yeah.
Like, you just being an innocent child around, and that's crazy.
Yep.
And see, it's usually the ones you trust.
Right. But the thing is that, especially in today's society, just the way everything is, where you got the Catholic Church doing it, you got pastors, you got teachers, so many teachers sleeping with these high school boys and girls. And here I think we had one earlier this year in middle school. And my son is in middle school, and I'm just like a firm believer of you watch your baby. He don't go to everybody's house. I don't care who it is. I don't allow him to go because I can't see what's going on at their house when I'm not there.
Exactly.
And
don't want
him. Absolutely. And I don't let him go to every friend's house. And it was funny because we put him in Boy Scouts, well, in Cub Scouts. And he wanted to do a overnight trip or something, and my husband's like, no, we're not going to do that. But it's just the point of you got to watch him because it's happening in so many different places that parents wouldn't even think of. It doesn't necessarily have to be a friend or somebody inside the house. It could be that coach that they're constantly, with all the time, or, that dance instructor. They stay in after school with the teacher. Things of that nature, you
mm-hmm.
got to watch that because I think my son did something. He had broke something in the classroom, and he had to put it back together. And he says, yeah, my teacher said that I have to come to the class in the morning, and I got to put it back together. I said, but what back together? He said, the little stand. He said, I wasn't paying attention and I broke it. I said, well, you couldn't put it back together, right? You know, and I'm asking questions, but I'm like, well, I'm going to go right along with you. we're going to put it back together together.
That's right.
I'm going to tell you something else, too. And a lot of parents, I tell a lot of parents these days, and they don't be wanting to hear me because parents be liking to act like they really be having control over their kids. But the truth of the matter is a lot of kids are being raised by the Internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents are taking the back seat to parenting because they're trying to remain hip and cool through their kids, living vicariously. Their kids is the one coming to them, showing them how their smartphone work. So now they're starting to think that the kid is a little bit smarter than the parent. And the roles are starting to get reversed. I'm seeing that more and more often now. Like, kids ain't coming to talk to their parents no more because they going on YouTube and Google and all these other sites. Like, they going to where their peer groups are, and their peer groups are people in the ages that are in the age groups that are them. So how much more can they know? Like, parents need to really parenting again. Really start sitting down with their kids, looking over the homework, making sure their kids get to the homework, putting structure in place. And I'm really mostly speaking about African-Americans because a lot of times, more times than not, these Caucasian kids, although they be caught up in a lot of the trends and things that we run to, they be structured. Like, they be in their household, they be already knowing, like, y'all only get, like, 4 hours a week of that.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours a week. Right? Your kid is on his phone 5 hours a day just going crazy on YouTube.
While
they're like,
at school.
Yeah, while they're at school, exactly. Like, parents have to start parenting again. But there's going to be more crazy in love situations because all these business, this next generation up is going to have a whole nother outlook on love. Look at that. I know when I was growing up, you know, I knew there was definitely, like, it was a lot of things that were going on, but definitely not at the level of the forefront of how it's being pushed out there now. Like, I very rarely saw two females in my age group walking around. Like, I'm teenager and they're teenager. They walk around holding hands and kissing and blah, blah. I didn't see that too often. Now, it's the norm.
Yeah.
That's the norm. Like, we got to stop letting society teach our kids with trends. Like, so seriously.
You're right.
And also, when you start talking.
Absolutely. And also, when you talk about sex, a lot of parents don't really talk about sex. You have some, you know, there are more that do than back in the day. You know, back in the day, like my mom would say, my grandmama didn't really talk to her about sex. You know, she kind of danced around it. You know, but I think that parents, when you are, especially in today's society, not only do we have to have a racial conversation, when you know, in a sexual conversation, we have to have a sexual abuse conversation. We have to have that early. You have to let them know touching, you know, what type of touching is appropriate, what type of touching is not appropriate, you know, non-touching, you know, what is okay, what should not be okay. You know, you have to let them know these things. They have to start, even though people say, oh, you know, she's 8 or he's 7 or he's 10 or she's 10, they're never too young because I don't think a sexual predator cares what age they are. They'll get a 4-month-old baby. They don't care. So I think as kids get older, you have to kind of let them know what's okay and what is not okay. And, you know, give them, like emergency passwords, you know, things that they would say to let you know that something is awry without letting the other person know something is awry, you know, where the kids are communicating with you and the only person that knows what's going on is you and that kid, so that you can be aware more so. And like Erin was saying, parents getting into that back to parenting their children because, you know, people might think, oh, I was just being tickled. Okay, well, tickling don't do all that extra stuff, you know, and if it's all this, that, and other, then that's more than a tickle.
Yeah,
and it's just that you need to tell
crazy.
Me.
And it's crazy because a stranger will try to go in and build a relationship with the child first to try to get them to trust before they make their move.
That's true.
That's how
true.
The molester does versus somebody just want to abuse the child and leave them. But a molester, like what I call a mass molester, because there are people that we know
and people that are close to our children, and they, like, hide behind a mask because they done manipulated the child and drew the child into a relationship where they trusted them, and then they start to make their move, and then they start to tell them how all these bad things will happen if they tell anybody. So kind of we have to also tell the kids that no matter what somebody tells you, we have to embed in them that you have to come to your parent and tell them what's going on in your life. When you feel like something is not right, you got to be open with me and let me know what's going on.
Right.
And the sad part of those parents.
So in addition to what Alicia was saying. In addition to what Alicia was saying as far as actions, it's also the words and the conversations that people have. You know, it's also those words that are not right. You know?
That's right.
In addition to the actions.
Correct. And the crazy thing is those parents that are not parenting and these things are happening to their children. The molester already know you ain't paying no attention. So they, you know, especially with girls, they'll get them and get them to trust them, and they already know that you're not paying attention, that you're not being a parent like you're supposed to. And then I think a lot of times that's how children get in relationships with maybe their mother's boyfriend or their you know, or their father's girlfriend. I think that's how that happens because, first of all, you weren't really parenting. You left a lot of holes for that person to kind of dip in and gain that child's respect and trust that you never really had. So they see that person as a parent, and they're trusting them. And so now they're able to manipulate and mold them, and then when they get into these situations, it's like, you know, you do have situations to where, you know, they have a baby by mom's ex-husband or the mom's ex-boyfriend or the dad's ex-girlfriend has a baby by the son because you something happened where you wasn't on your job.
Let's
you know, and you
the
allow
uncles
them.
And the granddads.
Right.
Because they in-house, so they feel like, you know, it's easy for them to get in.
That's true.
That's like true. The color purple, where Celie, all her kids were by her stepfather. You know, that stuff is it's serious. It's serious.
Yeah, and she, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, see, stuff like that, it's just crazy. Like, I mean, everybody's going to
push them. Absolutely, because they don't have nowhere to run to. They feel
that's
like they don't have any protection. They don't have anybody to talk to. They don't have anybody that, and if they did talk, they don't have anybody that will understand. And then those sad situations where they do tell, and the parent doesn't acknowledge or react or care or, you know, or
yeah,
understand.
The parent's so
like,
crazy
well,
in love. The parents are crazy in love. They won't do the right thing as an adult.
Absolutely.
And that happens
yeah,
a lot.
The kid.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Like that be sometimes, like sometimes children do be trying to tell their parents things. And like I said, they don't be parenting. So then their child will shut down. Or maybe even sometimes the child will be like, yo, you got to know. Like, where was you at 3:30 this morning when this character came in my bedroom out of yours? Where were you? You know what I mean? So sometimes kids be thinking like, yo, you got to know. It depends, especially things like that, when the abuse is taking place. If the abuse is taking place while the other adult is in the house, yeah, it's definitely going to throw the kid off. But if they're just sneaking, like if they always sneaking away doing it, like, every time they be like, yo, they already know, like, every time this person take me somewhere, every time my mother's gone, you know what I mean, this happens. So that's the time when parents have to be paying attention. Like, when you're getting ready to go somewhere, like work, you about to walk out of work and your child is fully dressed running behind you at the door, like, I want to come with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time.
It's the reason
stop.
Why?
Yeah, that's the time to stop and not flip out like, yo. Like, you know I got to go to work. If you don't, that's the time to stop like, yo, what the hell be going on when I'm not here?
Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. right.
You got to double back. I mean, that's when you double back.
Yeah, or when you tell your child, well, go with so-and-so. And they're like, nah, I don't want it. And they adamant about it. And this is somebody who lives in your household. Yeah.
That's right.
That might
take heed because there's something going on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be parenting at all times. And, then,
and I know it could be.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, D.
No.
I was just going to say, I know it could be difficult sometimes, especially if the mother is being abused. So, therefore, she's scared herself. You know what I'm saying? So, if there are situations to where she's being abused. And then, you know, your child is being abused, and she may not know what to do. And, you know, thank God I've never been in that situation, but just to be able to have that child being hurt, should be your encouragement to, they got to go to work, they got to leave. And when they leave, you and your baby got to leave. I don't care if y'all leave or whatever y'all got in y'all, just on y'all person, but you got to go. And this lets
you
know that you got to go.
I know that is true where a parent can be scared, but I have no sympathy for a woman that says she don't know what to do because you got the police department. Yeah, I don't have any sympathy for them because you're grown. You know what you can do. There's so many things you can do. You get your child and get out of there. Y'all can go to the safe home. Y'all can go talk to somebody at the police department. There's several things you can do. Sometimes they just want to stay and act like they don't know because they so scared to step outside of their comfort zone that they'll stay into a bad, dysfunctional situation and let this happen to this child. Like, oh, okay, they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Or even if you don't want to do that, you can send the child away. Don't ruin the child's life. If you want to stay in that, go right ahead.
That's
don't
right.
ruin the child, man.
And this is where this generational thing comes from, what I was talking about in Trace of My Blood, because they see what's going on, so they feel like it's okay. Just like you being in a relationship and you watch your mom get beat, you think, okay, this is how a relationship goes. So when the child get in a relationship, like, oh, he giving me fine things and he beating me, but when he beating me, he's showing me that he loves me. So I'm not going to leave him no matter what happened. I know that he loves me because they think that's love. Because they saw it growing up. And when you're being sexually abused, you will run into the arms of somebody that you feel like is protecting you, whether you're in a relationship. Like my situation, when I got into my relationship with my oldest daughter's father, I really felt like he loved me because he was giving me all these fine things. He was taking care of me. He got me an apartment. And he was abusive. So I thought, like, I'm with him, and it's just me and him. This is my world. I don't want to leave him. I might end up going somewhere else and doing something. And at the same time, if I'm going to have sex with somebody, let me give it to the person I want to give it to, not have somebody come and take it from me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how their mentality is when they've been went through things like that, some of them. And then some of them get so hard as to they don't want to, they had this wall up that, it's hard to get into a relationship that's gonna be a good one.
Word up, that's true.
Absolutely.
Because they be scared. Like
yeah,
they,
and when you get a good man, you won't recognize him when you get him.
Exactly.
You're too scared.
You be done complained about all the stuff this other guy did to you, and then you get in a new relationship, and before you know it, you exercising them same traits that you didn't like on this new person.
That's right.
Because that's what you thought was love.
And a lot of abusers were abused. A lot of people were abused. Sexually abused, you know, themselves as children. Like Serenity was saying, as far as a learned type of behavior, most of the time, they were abused themselves, and it was something that they saw as growing up was deemed to be okay, you know, and then they abuse somebody else who's going to abuse somebody else. So it's definitely, like you were saying, a generational type. It will go through the generations as something that is taught and carried on. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, Serenity, I have a question about Xenon. I'm actually reading that right now. Does any of the characters in that story kind of portray what you've gone through, or anyone that you know have gone through it?
Well, I can tell you this. My uncle, the character Frenchie that's in the book.
Frenchie, okay.
Uh-huh, my uncle. Okay, it's kind of, I put my auntie is like Tiny. And my uncle is Frenchie, even though I made those two best friends in the book.
Uh-huh.
That they are, they've been through the exact same thing that's in there. I got my auntie right now. She's still going through that same thing right now. She's still in the streets. She's still on drugs. And my uncle, he was addicted to cocaine. He was a bisexual male. And exactly what happened to him, except for the things like when Tiny came in and she was being a friend to him, I watched my grandmother do that stuff with him, like as far as being there for him when he was, when he found out he had HIV. My grandmother, like a scene in there, for instance, I can't remember if I was 7 or 8 years old, something like that. No, about 9 or 10, because I think he died when I was 12, if I'm not mistaken. He was in the bathroom, and we could hear a loud thud in there. So my grandmother went in there, and she got in the shower with him, and she held him up, and he was telling her that she didn't have to do that, and she was like, "You my child. It's like I'm doing you a favor. This is what I want to do for you, be here for you." So, yeah, and even the guys in there, the guys that I grew up with, like Roscoe, I added some more stuff to his character from other characters, but it's basically all the same. Drug dealers get caught up when the dope boys was down in the hood we grew up in. They would be dating this woman, and then next thing you know, you find out that they cheating with women that's on crack. They kind of bring them in so they can have them around them all the time, constantly, to get them to do what they want them to do for them. And all the time they have this relationship with them. So, yeah, and I was involved with a guy when I was younger that he was, come to find out, he was messing with a woman that was on drugs just because they feel like they on drugs so they can get them at their weakest point and get them to do whatever they want them to do. Which is awful, but I kind of wrote that book from, I grew up in the school down here, they call it Ninth Street and Jamestown Boulevard. So basically all of that is what I see. That's why I wrote it like I wrote it. A lot of people don't like it, the way that I wrote it, but I wrote it just the way it happened. I know certain things that you have to do when you're writing books, but at the time when I started writing Phoenix, I didn't know a thing about writing a book, to be honest with you, not one single thing. I just read some books, and I went to writing a story as I saw it. The Library Journal put me in the top 10 in 2011 for street literature.
But it's real, though. It's coming off as real, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you're right there with the in the scenes and everything.
Yep, it's uncut. I can tell you that. It's crazy because it's a lot of people that I grew up with. They come to me and they be like, "Who is such and such? Is this such and such?" And I be telling them, "If you read the book, you'll know who it is."
Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was going to say, those things are happening every day. So not only can you and your family and friends relate to it, your readers can relate to it also.
Yeah. So they'll read it and they'll be like, "Oh, this such and such, this round the way or whatever." Or a woman might read it and be like, "Dog, I went through this with this man. I'm still going through it now. I wonder how I'm going to get out of it." Or get on the idea, "I better start checking on him and see what's going on with him and this chick over here, because something fishy about this."
Right.
And nine times out of ten, it'd be the truth.
That woman's intuition, huh?
the good feeling.
Right.
I'm just saying, let you know.
Yeah. Me too. Go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry to cut you off, girl.
No, I was just going to ask. A lot of times, urban fiction or street literature or whatever, however they want to brand it, because it does have so many different names, but it's the same thing. It gets a bad rap sometimes for being a bad influence on kids and in our community and our society, but yet and still we have videos and movies and, you know, just stars and the things that they do, that the gossip that comes out on a regular basis. Why do you feel about that, as far as them saying that urban fiction or street lit writers are a bad influence, being a street lit writer yourself?
Urban fiction to me is just what we said is fiction, but at the same time, it's true life things. But it's not like we're glorifying it, because in the books, it teaches you that everything that you do in life has a consequence behind it. So I don't know why they set us aside like that. Maybe because most of them are written by African-American authors. But then look at the movies that Caucasians will make about African-Americans, and it's basically the same thing, but it's okay. I'm going to put it in a big theater and let them go pay all this money to go in there and make millions of dollars off of it.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Right. They made Boys in the Hood. They made Training Day. They made, I don't know why they do it. They think we're glorifying drug dealing and sex, and I guess because we give it raw and uncut, and other people will try to clean it up a little bit. It's the same thing. It don't matter if you say the P-U-S-S-Y word or if you say my vagina. It's the same thing.
That's right.
That's just how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just keep it real.
Absolutely.
Certain things you can put on TV, certain things you can't. They'll take out books and then redo them and put them on TV and water it down. But once you go purchase a book, you see that it's, anytime you have a book and they turn into a movie, it's going to be more than a book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like with The Color Purple. They put The Color Purple on TV, but they watered it down. You go and read the book, and it get more into detail of what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
With the dead.
I heard that.
So you can see it. Oh, yeah, you can see it on the TV, and basically with the TV, whoever made the movie, they telling you the story. But when you're reading a book, you can picture the story yourself in your head, how you think it played out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anybody influencing you like they do with the movie. They tell you that it went this way. When you can read the book and get everything that the author put in there and create your own picture.
That's so true. Well, what about you, Erin, being a street lit or urban fiction author yourself?
I think that's just a stigma they try to put on the genre or whatever. Like I've even had to go through that when I was locked up in prison. Like I had some urban fiction sent to me, and they was like kind of trying to tell me I couldn't have it, and I was like, are you serious? Like, yo, you got James Patterson in your life, Stephen King, you got, you know, I just started naming a bunch of just different authors that I knew they had in their library, their titles, and they gave me my books immediately. You feel me? So
yeah,
it's like, you know, it's all the same thing. Like, what you was going to do, tell me James Patterson ain't talking about violence, or he's not using, you know, any type of derogatory terms. Like, what were you going to do? So it's the same thing that applies here. Like, you know, these stories are ominous, a lot of them. They have an ominous feel or whatever. But, you know, they're just as much as like a Stephen King novel. James Patterson writes urban fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've read books where he's right in the hood with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just his presentation is just a little bit more eloquent than, you know, what would come across for the hard-edged street writing that we write. But it's, that's why it's genre-specific, it's street, because it has that hard, rough-edge, coarse language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not so much the content that's making it, you know, street. It's the language that's affecting it to for them to say, hey, this is street or this is slang. It's the language. It's not the content. The content, a lot of times, be the same. People getting killed in all types of novels. People are getting raped in all types of novels. Incest is going on in all types of novels.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
The same things are going on. It's not the content. It's the language. And that's what I think people need to start focusing on more, like, you know, than anything. It's not just, you know, these ominous tales. These are cautionary tales is what they really are,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, keep it fair.
I think it's the delivery also and the realness, because you can know better firsthand than a James Patterson, you know, and you bring that realness to your novel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely all in the presentation, like you said, Tony. The presentation is definitely, you know, let me tell you something. Like, this is just real as far as that's concerned. Like, there have been scholars that have wrote about Iceberg Slim's writing. You know what I mean? Like, the way he writes is just crazy. Like, he speaks on that high level eloquent note with these other authors, but he has that dark feel, that dark presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even his introduction to slang is so precise and well put that it leaves them in awe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's just a writer, basically. Like, he's just a writer. He's a writer that writes these sketchy tales. It's not horror, it's not this, but it's street.
Absolutely. I totally agree, because he's still writing about profanity. He's still writing about violence. He's still writing about sin. And some of the mainstream books, whether it's Stephen King or James Patterson, some of their books are more detailed. Like, they're giving you instructions on how to do it, you know, or what needs to be done. And it's the same way, you know. And you might say it's watered down. It might be watered down in some ways when you get a James Patterson book. But the twisted effect is what makes it concentrated. You know what I'm saying? It makes it stick. Because even though you water down some of the lands, you know, the city, it's written in the city, but just because you water down some of the activities, because you are so detailed,
mm-hmm.
that's what makes it stick. You know, it's like, dang, that whole book, you just told somebody how to commit a murder in like 500 words right there. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think people see that. I think when they see a black author, they're intimidated because they have a realness, because they have experience behind it. And I think it's hard to have realness if you don't actually have that experience. You know what I'm saying? People can see where, is, you know, it can be differentiated. But I think they are very intimidated, especially by black authors, because if they can do this in such a new genre, they can branch off into many other genres, and they can write suspense, and they can write horror. They can be another Stephen King, and then that puts competition out there. That's just my opinion, but I think that's what it is too.
And also, I don't think those type of authors can touch real street, like take Serenity's Fenin. You know, she lived that, so she makes it unreal, it's uncut, and I don't think a James Patterson can hold the candle to something like that, because he hasn't actually lived. He hasn't actually walked in her or his shoes. That's why she can bring that uncut grittiness to it, and a lot of people can relate to it.
Yep, that's
absolutely
true. Now I definitely don't think James Patterson definitely probably can't gather those natural emotions, but James Patterson is the type of writer that's smart enough to go talk to a Serenity Hall.
He's a good enough
mm-hmm. writer to place down what he's learned back in word on paper. Like, if you look at James Patterson's books and stuff, those authors be citing sources where they actually got this information. Thank you to medical examiner such and such, such and such. You know,
right.
They be thinking lawyer offices, police department. These people be out actually researching.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
You know what I mean? I pay attention. The first thing I read when I open a book is the first page, meaning I don't skip to the story. I read the acknowledgement. I read everything.
Me too.
I read everything. And a lot of times, more times than not, and I've rarely seen cases in African-American work, whether it be urban fiction or contemporary, where people are stating sources, where they're getting this from. You know, and how this came about. So, I mean, as well as James Patterson, he's an excellent writer. So, I definitely he would be smart enough to go talk to a Serenity Hall. So, when he writes about someone going through this situation, when you read it in his book, you're going to still be able to relate.
Now, see, I'm a huge James Patterson fan. I love him.
I was
going to
say, he can still come find me and come talk to me.
Yeah. He's going to make it colorblind for you.
He really does, and he's a very eloquent author to where his kids' series is, like, off the hook. I mean, he has sixth-grade kids just, like, in a trance because they can relate to what he's saying, and he's 60. Like, my son, he loves his middle school Get Me Out of Here series, and the first thing he says is, I want to meet him because he's a grandpa, and he writes a book about somebody my age. You know what I'm saying? And the kid, he's just so shocked that he can relate to what the old man is saying, but he's speaking in the eyes of an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old. So he is a very good author, very good.
Yeah, definitely.
He is.
Definitely.
Because a lot of his early works that I used to read, he never had a picture of himself on his cover. So for some reason, I always thought he was a black man.
Really?
James Patterson can be, you know, for some reason, I always thought he was a black man, an older black man, until I actually saw a picture of him.
Well, you see who Alex Cross is, don't you?
I'm sorry?
See who Alex Cross is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
what I was about to say. Like, James Patterson's no fool. Like, Alex Cross, he's from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like his character is from Detroit, from a inner city, a rough inner city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like James Patterson went and did research.
And they have a big mama. Most black homes have a big mama.
Exactly.
That's right.
He did research. He's announcing this, and he's keeping it real. And he
That's
sold
why
it.
That's
they
why
can't even
I'm
have an Alice Cross
them.
Character white on
Mm-mm.
screen. A white Alice Cross on screen would look distorted to anybody who's ever read James Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
That's why I thought it was, for some reason, it just, as I'm reading, I know this is a black author that I'm reading, but lo and behold, I still enjoy his works, and he's still one of my favorite authors.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you. Like you said, he does his research.
Yeah, they do their research. Like, I look at that in all books. Like, I don't know. My favorite authors be a little
Sometimes.
Different. My favorite author is Sidney Sheldon of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, he's good.
Over anybody, male or female, I'll take him.
That's true. He is good. God,
you were going to say something, Serenity? No, I was saying, like, in the urban authors, we have our research because we lived it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we start going to add other stuff in there, like people writing about going to Dubai and all that stuff. Oh, it's time to do your homework.
Exactly.
It's been there.
Exactly.
I personally try to stay away from that type of stuff myself. I haven't been to Dubai, and I don't plan on going, to be honest. So I try to stay away from it and stick with what I know. After something I'm writing on, like love story, and I want these people to go to London or something, I got to go talk to some friends. I have a couple of friends that have been there. But other than that, right now, as I start into my career, my early career, I kind of speak to what I know.
And that's the safest place to be. For real. Because you start, like you said, you got to do research. Like you be seen, like if like you said, the Dubai thing. Like you have to, like the truth of a novel is a real novel. Meaning, like, if you're telling somebody something, like you have to have all those elements there. You need to know the Dubai culture. You can't just be going over there to handle what you're going to handle. You have to know how it is in the airport. Yo, we need to get these vaccines before we pop off over here.
That's right.
You know, just all of that needs to be mentioned in the book. The climate change, how these people are living, the culture needs to be exploited. Because you need to make the reader feel like, what? They're in Dubai, not on page 167.
That's right. Absolutely.
You know, so it's like, it's crazy now.
You're right.
And it's unfortunate sometimes. I think I read something online, an article or something I was researching for one of the shows we did. But Terry McMillan has sent a letter to the editor of Simon and Schuster's, or
Simon and Schuster.
Yeah, Simon and Schuster. Okay. So she sent a letter to them, and she was blasting them for publishing and promoting what she called ghetto lit. But she blasted them for promoting street literature and publishing it, you know, and
she's been on that tirade for years. She's been on that tirade for years. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Back in the days, I used to be, like, looking at her sideways, like, lady, go shut up and jump in a trunk somewhere. But now, honestly, a lot of the points that she was bringing up back in the days are relevant for the writing that's being offered to the genre today. Like, I got to keep it honest, y'all. But that wasn't what was happening back in the days when she was doing it.
Right.
You know, but now, her points are a little bit, they got a little bit of validity. I can't even lie.
I have learned through my first two novels before I got to this, the most important thing also with writing your novels before you're putting them out is that editing. Editing is everything. See, in the beginning, I was in prison. It was like, I didn't know all that stuff about it. That's why I say I'm still learning as I go. But this editor that I have, Linda Wilson is her name, she's really, really good. And I'm telling you, if you're wrong about anything, like times, dates, I'm talking about the wording, everything, she sticks it out there. She try to give it to you nice, but really she be telling you that you need to just get your stuff together because this is not going to cut it.
You
have to have an editor like that.
You do. Editors are responsible for some of these best-selling books. Like, real talk, it'd be the editor that be transforming that manuscript into magic. Like, that's
Sometimes you need an editor. It could be the difference between a 5-star and a 1-star review sometimes.
That's true.
Yeah. It really can. Because you have so many of these new books, and they're not edited, and the spelling and the words that they're using, and sometimes all of that throws off a reader. Because, like Serenity was saying, the reader is trying to play back whatever it is that the author has written, and they're trying to rewrite that in their head so that they can visualize it. But when you got misspelling, or if sentence structure isn't right, all of that can throw a reader off. And even though you made that book 99 cents, it really doesn't matter because you're not putting out quality, you know. And I think editors are very important as far as making sure that authors are putting out quality work, no matter what they price their book as.
Yeah, that's true.
And you have to make sure that you follow your editor's advice. Like, I had a scene in my book that I just didn't want to get rid of. So I had to take the time to go back and read. And I was like, she said, I need to just take this out because it just don't make sense. Now, if I do a part two then, she said, you can take that and put it in part two. It needs to come out. So when I sat down and thought about, like, do I care as much to have this scene in this book, or do I care that I'm giving my readers my all? So I was like, I'm taking it out. She was like, you wrote it. It was a really good scene that you wrote, but it has to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it out. I just don't want to disappoint my readers, and I want my readers to see my growth.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
To my career.
Uh-huh.
That's what you. That's what we really be wanting as authors. Like, well, I know that's what I be wanting. I be wanting the readers to grow with me, like, see my growth. I want to keep giving you the same book over and over again.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I want to be expanding my growth as well as, you know, offering new material. Like, I can't be offering you new material when it was the same material again. You know, so.
Right, you just warming it up every time and putting it in a different bowl and you serving it out. And that's important because as a reader, a true reader of any author, they will evolve with that author's pen. If that author feels like they want to go and write a mystery, they're gonna go right over there and they're going to buy that mystery book. You know what I'm saying? They're going to go wherever that author decides to take their pen because everybody needs growth. They're not going to stay stagnant and hovering in one area and feel like there's so much more that they are capable of doing or even wanting to aspire to do more, you know, or try out different things. You know, if we expect our authors to just keep writing those particular kinds of books, we may enjoy them. But to just hold them to that, then we're doing our own self a disservice because that author might have the type of pen that can take you into a genre that you never thought you'd read before. You know what I'm saying? Where you start getting introduced to different things. And I think that's very important what Erin was saying.
I think so too, Leisha. As you know, you and I have our readers hat on tonight because I was thinking the same thing because as readers, as your author grows, you grow, you know, and true readers and true fans, like you said, they will follow, you know, they will go right along with that author, you know, and that's what you want. You want that relationship to grow. You don't want it to remain stagnant. So as readers, that's, you know, you and I are both on the same page. But we do have some callers on the line, and if they do want to talk to our guest tonight, please press that 1, you know. They may just be enjoying listening.
And welcome. The other thing is I was posting, I was promoting, and a lot of times I promote in not just the urban fiction type groups, but other groups as well. So I promoted in this book, and this one group, and she said, I don't think that is a cozy mystery. And I'm thinking, at first I got offended because I'm like, how do you know what the book is? You ain't even read it. So, you know, I'm like upset. And then I had to think, well, what the heck is a cozy mystery? So I had to ask Nene, you know, what a cozy mystery was. But it's a Murder, She Wrote type book. And I'm thinking myself, we can have a black author that's capable of writing a Murder, She Wrote type book. You know what I'm saying? If I had a favorite author that wanted to write that type of book, I would buy it. Because, you really don't see those books often, but just the experience to know that, okay, this is a cozy mystery. Well, okay, well, I want to be cozy too. And if somebody asks, I'm for real. I was like, I told Nene, I said, well, you need to write a cozy mystery because I didn't know what it was, and I was offended at first because I had never been introduced to that type of book. And I didn't even read Murder, She Wrote as a book. I would see it on TV.
Right.
So it's like it's good to be introduced to different things. And if you don't experience them, you will never know. You'll never know what you like to read. You know what I'm saying? You'll never know. You'll think that the only thing I want to read is about shooting, sex, and drugs. You know? And then you'll never know.
Let me ask you a question, for real. is why do people think that's what an urban street novel is? Shooting, sex, and drugs. Because I'm not isolated, because I'm really, by large, a lot of people believe, like, you will actually get flack if you start talking about anything else in the urban fiction genre. Like, if it's not enough murder, sex, or drugs, you will get slam dunked. Why is that
you
the forefront
what?
Of the genre when there's so much other things going on in these low-income neighborhoods that we write about?
You know what I think it is? First of all, I think it's that people don't understand that there's a difference between street literature and urban. Urban basically is in the city. And a lot of people don't know that. They smush it all together, and they think that everything, this is what it is. And so me saying that, it's the same thing. It's like you smush it all together. It's like they don't know that there are different categories. You know, there's street literature, but then you might have some urban romance. And, you know, a lot don't think they understand how to separate them. They smush it all together, and they say because it's in the city, it's inner city. Okay, well, in the inner city, they have drugs. They got kids pregnant. They got this. They got that. And then that's just what it is. That's just what I think. I think that we all smush it together, because I know I did before I really had an understanding to know that there is a difference. I did. Uh-huh. I smushed it all together. And I was, you know, and that's how I would envision it. If you said urban fiction, I'm thinking of sex, drugs, and somebody about to get killed.
Now I have a question, Serenity. The book that you're about to put out, what category would you put that book in?
Street literature. I don't know. It's kind of half and half.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of half because there's not a lot of killing in there, for sure. It's kind of, uh-huh. I don't know, it's basically about love and what women going through with hustlers and stuff like that, but it's not a lot of killing. I tend to not write about a lot of killing. For some reason, I try to stay away from that because I just feel funny about it. So I try to stay away from that. So I would say that it's half and half, because it's more about these women going through these relationships with these men that are no good for them, but they're still trying to hold on. And a guy, and one of the guys in the book, his name is Fletcher. He was abandoned by his mom because she was a dope fiend. And he is so bitter about it that he just trying to be hardcore because he got this bitterness in him that he hasn't had time to deal with yet because of his mom. But then he ends up dealing with a woman that's identical to his mom.
Oh, wow.
So they'll have to read. They'll have to read to see how he deals with that. Because I don't want to give it away.
Is that more like a contemporary type book?
I don't know. I have to lead up for readers to do it. I say it's between street literature and urban fiction.
It sounds like it's a book that like you should say is just smushed all of that. You have some of everything. You have contemporary,
yeah, that one is
relationship. You know?
That one is kind of smooshy. A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
But that's true. It's funny because we only got a few minutes, but I was talking to Optimus Ray yesterday. And it was so funny because we were just talking about how...
Did you give her my love?
No, I did not, Aaron. I'm sorry. I was thinking about myself at the time. I was being selfish. I do apologize. But we were talking about erotica and how every book should have a little bit of something in it. And it should be a mashup. Like, I would see Nene's book as erotica and street lit just mashed together. You know, sometimes you have some books where they really don't have a plot. They don't really have, they're missing an element. And I think it is important that sometimes you just take some of those elements from different genres and just kind of smash it in. So I'm definitely looking for that book, Serenity, because you look like you're doing a little smash-up over there.
I smashed it in. And let me tell you another thing, why I get to putting a six in my book, because I started out writing it. And I was in prison, so a lot of people in prison, crazy to say, they was like reading, was like, oh, this is good. So they was like, whatever you do, for as long as you write, make sure you put those sex scenes in there, because we in prison need to read these scenes. Like, because I was going home before a lot of the other people. And they said that's what they wanted to read. So a lot of those people bought my book. So I don't want to take away from that. I want to give them what they want.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's always so.
You get a Serenity book, and you know that Serenity is writing these real dirty sex scenes, then I want to continue to give them to you.
So
that's
what
I try to do.
They want.
Yeah. I don't want to lose the ones that I already have. I want to gain more, but I don't want to lose the ones that I have and be like, oh, she trying to take all this out and she trying to do this and try to be somebody else. I want to grow, but at the same time, I'm going to keep my readers because if I promise them something, I want to try to deliver it.
I'm going to tell you something, y'all. There's nothing better than writing a early morning sex scene when you're in prison. Not that prison is a good place, but anybody that's ever been in prison, any authors, any writers that are serious about their sex scenes, they already serenity, no, because you already so sexually oppressed anyway. And then, you know, when you gearing up, when you wake up in the morning, you gearing up, you be ready.
That's right. And then you got to read it over. And if you read it over and make you tick a little bit, you know that you got what they're looking for.
Yeah. Like, seriously.
I know that's
like,
right.
Like, for real. You start, you be, and plus your imagination for sex is way more intense.
Sure is.
Because it's something that's removed. You know what I mean? It's only tangible in your mind. So.
Yeah.
You know.
Go ahead, Trinity. I was saying, and then you get in that spot where you go to think about stuff you never had a chance to do when you was home.
Mm-hmm.
You be like, well, I'm going to try a little bit of this when I get out of here, so let me just go ahead and put it in here.
Yeah.
You know, you will go above and beyond, just add stuff in. And then you're going to talk to people in prison, or you're going to hear conversations about what they've been doing. You're like, dog, I missed that. Let me put a little bit of that in there, too.
Absolutely. But I do honestly think that female authors write way better sex scenes than male authors. And I apologize to all the male authors out there that may feel some kind of way. But I do believe that female authors, their sex scenes are more intense than male authors' sex scenes. I'm
sorry. I think I might be the exception.
I knew he was going to disagree with that one.
No, I'm just saying,
I mean,
because
I don't
want
to see just the words. I don't want just the words on the paper. I want to be able to visualize it. I want it to be something I'm taking notes, trying to figure out how to do, and I'm putting my back out in the process. You know, a lot of times you don't get that from male authors. You get the words. Or sometimes they use those huge words that they feel that is so sexual, but it's really not, because I can't visualize all of that. You know, but I don't know. I'm sorry, Erin. I do. I think female authors, when it comes to sex scenes, they are like at the top of, they are at the top. Male authors, they fall in somewhere in between. You know, they in there, but their scenes will never be better than a female author.
I have to agree with Alicia. I have an undercover pen, as she's always saying, and I
really
wrote a scene that just came. And it was pretty high, I think so. You think so, Alicia? You had the pleasure of reading
it. I did, yes. I was like, is that Tony? That's why I say she got an undercover pen, y'all. Don't let Tony fool you. She's right.
I generally think women authors are better writers than male authors. I've said this before. You know, I'm still saying it. Like, that hasn't changed. Just think that, you know, write some sex scenes.
Erin, you know what the crazy thing about that is? You write some good sex scenes, but you know what it is? Men tend to think that they know everything about the woman's body when they don't. We have to teach y'all what to do. to make us feel good. Because you just
That's
don't know,
right.
because you're not a woman. So we have to tell you what, I don't care how much you think you're putting a smack down. Some women will sit there and
she
just boost your
down.
Ego up and get up and be like, he think he did something, he ain't do anything. But if they telling you and they guiding you through what's going on, then that's going to make you better at what you're doing.
I agree with that. And it's the same way with men. Yo, I'm serious. Like, you know, I really think women have this big misconception in their head that there's no bad coochie to men. Like, y'all think that we're so much dogs that any women that think that generally most men are dogs, they generally think that we will screw anything and that, you know, we don't have any morals about us. And that is so far away from the truth. That's a myth. Like, the same way how y'all be giggling and laughing, like, oh, he wasn't there. Trust me, that goes on. Maybe not in the guy's locker room because we don't, you know, we probably might not talk about that with each other all the time. But in the head of the man, like, we be knowing, like, we definitely be knowing, like, she's really not what, she's not that.
Well, I guess
that's
what they get for sticking it everywhere.
No, I mean, I'm not even talking about the male that's a dog. I'm not
going
to talk about the male that you think is a dog. It could be the average guy. It could be a good guy, a guy that's faithful. You know, all the qualities that a woman wants in a man. And this guy can have sex with a woman and be like, yo, she is definitely not all that. Like she thought she is, or that she thinks she is. Like, it's just, listen, men, we share the same things. Not all men are good to women, and not all women are good to men.
Okay, I'm going to give you that, Bipo, because I don't know, because I'm not a man.
Exactly.
I'm taking your word for it.
Yeah, it's the truth. I mean, as a woman, which one of y'all women is willing to admit? See, y'all know Serenity. She probably going to admit. Which one of y'all women willing to admit y'all actually have asked a man? Like, y'all done did the doing, and you said, like, yo, how was it? Because you sitting back worried if it wasn't what he thought it was.
I have never done it.
Oh, I thought everybody got off the line for a minute.
I ask my husband all the time because, you know, sometimes you don't know. Hey,
okay.
Because I don't know everything.
And there's nothing wrong
with
that.
I think it comes to some people are more sexual than others.
That's right.
And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times when it comes through writing erotic books or street literature or whatever genre you're writing and you're putting a sex scene in there, I think that also is a factor that somebody is more sexual than the other. You know, so a lot of times I think that's why we see women, females authors, sex scene more visual. You know, you can visually, and it might be something where you got to read it a couple more times because you're trying to figure out, okay, so what was they doing?
Mm-hmm.
Just like Nene has the electric chair. And everybody was trying to figure out how to do the electric chair. You know, but it was just, that's what we look for, especially when you're reading a sex scene.
And everybody wanted
an
electric chair.
We are out of time, y'all. We are out of time. We actually went a little over, Serenity. We had such a good time.
Yes,
I did too.
It was great having you on here.
Well, hopefully I'll be back soon as the book drops.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely. You need to come back after the book drop so we could, you know, talk some more about it, the release and the type of reception you're getting from your readers and supporters, and definitely what you're going to have up next after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got something coming after that.
Okay.
Well, you know, you can always hit us up. You know, we are always open to our great authors, and we truly, like Lisha and Zivo said, we truly enjoyed having you in the clubhouse tonight, and thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening and streaming in to Writing Royalty. We will see you tomorrow for Author Wives. Season
yes.
1, Episode 2. They'll be talking about those book groupies. And as Mimi would say, drop that beat.
Translate for you dumb. That's 100 nooks, not 99.
99.
Cause that 1% could be the reason you doing time.